From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Tuesday, March 21st, 2017. And on this day, why Maine lobstermen are worried about losing ground to Canadian lobster. And a new report says that Maine has left nearly $2 billion of federal funds on the table over the last few years. We'll have details. That's all ahead in a moment.
This Day in Maine is made possible by listeners like you and by USM's Muskie School of Public Service Master of Public Health Program, preparing students for today's complex population health and health services needs.
Over the past 5 years, the state of Maine has left nearly $2 billion of federal funds on the table. That's according to a progressive think tank, which attributes half of that amount to a decision to not expand Medicaid. Mal Leary has details.
The Maine Center for Economic Policy says it undertook the study to bring together scattered reports about grants not sought and available funds not accessed by the state. Center Director Garrett Martin says that in addition to the loss of Medicaid expansion funds under the Affordable Care Act, the state missed out on matching highway funds estimated at $196 million. Martin says both of those programs would have required state funds to be spent to access the federal funding.
But the bottom line at the end of the day is that it doesn't actually matter why we've chosen not to go after these dollars. The real impact is that we don't have these dollars and that they are resources that, again, could really make a difference in terms of promoting opportunity and boosting our economy.
Martin says if all available federal funds had been accessed by the state, it would have created thousands of jobs and injected as much as $700 million into Maine's economy. But the LePage administration defends its decision not to tap into those federal funds. Most of the money was in programs administered by the Department of Health and Human Services. Commissioner Mary Mayhew says it's all still taxpayer money, whether it's collected by the federal government or by the state.
Federal money represents tax dollars being paid by hardworking Mainers and individuals throughout the country. And the notion that it is somehow ours for the taking with no consequences is ridiculous. And
Mayhew says the state did not expand Medicaid coverage because it would have cost Maine taxpayers more to draw down the additional federal dollars. But Garrett Martin of the Maine Center for Economic Policy says not all of the missed opportunities identified in the study required a state match. He says there are several programs in DHHS, such as food stamps and some public health grants, that are fully funded by Washington and yet were never sought out by the LePage administration.
In the instances where it's all federal money, you have to ask the question, why are we leaving that money on the table?
Mayhew's answer is that her agency is dedicated to setting priorities that are right for Maine.
Chasing federal dollars for the sake of chasing federal dollars does not help to support that value equation focused on what matters most for the people of this state.
Martin says he hopes the study will be used by the legislature to rethink why they've not sought all federal funds that are available. Mayhew says her agency will continue to seek federal grants and use matching funds when it makes sense. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Mal Leary.
A broad coalition of solar power businesses, environmental advocates, and industrial energy users want state regulators to revisit new rules for solar power adopted earlier this year. Fred Bever has our story.
In January, Maine's Public Utilities Commission ordered a 15-year ramp down of credits rooftop solar users can earn when they put excess electricity on the power grid. That's often called net metering. Emily Green, a lawyer with the Conservation Law Foundation, says the new policy will make it harder to recoup the big upfront investment the technology requires and runs afoul of existing law that puts a premium on increasing solar build-out in the state.
Our assessment is that the Commission's approach will convert a beneficial clean energy program, one that is designed to ensure much-needed growth in Maine's solar market, to one that actually harms Maine consumers and businesses.
Governor Paul LePage has also pilloried the regulator's decision. He says it will take too long to end the subsidy all energy consumers pay to help bring solar power to the grid. But even the advocates say they do not believe the regulators will reverse course. The petition for reconsideration is a necessary step before filing a lawsuit. In the legislature, meanwhile, several bills that would restore a net metering system are pending. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Fred Bever.
Some Maine fishermen say they've always been at a disadvantage when they try to compete with their Canadian counterparts. Now the Maine lobster industry is weighing a pending trade agreement between Canada and the European Union, which could adversely impact lobster prices in Maine. A.J. Higgins has details.
It's been a touchy subject down east for years.
Canada's always put the screw to the United States fishermen. They don't have the regulations we do.
Colby Young, a recently retired lobster fisherman from Korea, Maine, says that the pending trade deal between Canada and the European Union is the latest example of a marketing system that has given Canadian fishermen an edge. Known as the Canada-European Union Comprehensive Economic and Trade Agreement, or CETA, the new partnership would remove the 8% tariff on live lobsters for Canada, but the fee would remain on for the United States. And with the added advantage of a current exchange rate that makes the Canadian dollar worth about 75 cents American, the Canadian lobster should be attractive to the European market. Young says Maine lobster fishermen should keep a close eye on what happens once that agreement is signed.
Of course they should. All your regulations, I don't care what it is, the Canadians always have the advantage over the American fishermen.
It's always a concern when you fear you're going to lose a little bit of your advantage in a marketplace.
Patrice McCarron, executive director of the Maine Lobstermen's Association, says she can understand why fishermen are asking questions about the CETA deal. But she says the market for lobsters around the world continues to experience tremendous growth at a time when Maine lobster landings are also increasing. But McCarron acknowledges that the industry cannot ignore the implications of international trade agreements. Jeff Bennett, who analyzes seafood trade markets at the Maine International Trade Center, says that while Maine lobster sales to China have tripled in recent years, the value of the EU market is still important.
It's only been recently that China, at least for Maine seafood and Maine lobster, it's just been recently that China has surpassed the EU in terms of a market, but the EU is not that far behind, and it still represents a huge market for Maine seafood and Maine lobster.
Industry watchers say the new CETA agreement could be in place by early summer. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm A.J. Higgins.
Finally today, this week an Islamic women's activist and global advocate for women's equality is bringing her message to Maine. Zaina Anwar of Malaysia is meeting with students at several schools over the next few days and capping off her visit to the state with a public lecture Thursday night at the University of Southern Maine. This morning she spoke to students at Deering High School in Portland, where several Muslim female students also shared their experiences. Patty White has more.
Anwar's activism began in the late 1980s in Malaysia when she and a few of her friends started hearing complaints from other women about problems they were having under Islamic law. The women were frustrated, for example, that they didn't have the same rights as their husbands. Anwar and her friends wanted to understand the basis for this inequality, so they decided to reread the Quran. What they found in its verses, she says, surprised them.
They talk about justice, about equality between men and women.
To promote this often misunderstood aspect of the religion, that women should be treated as equals, Anwar and her friends formed a Malaysian organization called Sisters in Islam. Eventually, that effort led to a global movement called Musawa, which means equality in Arabic. 3 decades into this work, Anwar says there are still Islamic laws that justify discrimination against women.
Women's realities today have changed. Women are providers, women are protectors of their family, but the law has not recognized the change.
Just as followers of Islam say at its core, the religion is about peace, Anwar says it's also about equality and justice. These values are what Deering High student Deka Noor says attracts her to Islam. She was one of five female Muslim student panelists who told her classmates that she thinks Islamic discrimination against women is a cultural problem in some countries, but not in the U.S. Here, she says, she faces other challenges.
I don't feel oppressed in my, like, within the Muslim community, just the outside people, and, like, I can walk down the Old Port and get called a terrorist. Like, I would expect that. I would go in downtown with that mentality, and I just feel like anywhere you go, you'll still have that hate.
I've been told, go back to your country. You don't belong here. We speak English here.
Bilan Mohammed says disdain for Muslims is a regular part of life, but she's also felt support from the non-Muslim community, especially following President Donald Trump's immigration ban.
Whether it be people coming to the mosque and showing their support, or just sending letters to the mosque and telling us, hey, we're here for you.
For these young Muslim women, misconceptions about their religion are difficult to address, especially, says El Wadwera, because they're reinforced by President Trump.
Trump's Muslim ban especially, there will be a lot of discrimination with Muslim people to come because of his dehumanization of Muslims and more ignorance that will happen. So I think, you know, we're all scared for ourselves and our religion and finding out ways that we can still practice our religion without worrying about our security.
Though these students are fighting different challenges than those of Zaina Anwar of Malaysia, Anwar did offer advice to students on how to affect change. Education, she says, will give them courage to stand up for their beliefs. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White. For more of today's Maine news, visit our website, mainepublic.org. And from Maine Public, that's This Day in Maine, Tuesday, March 21st, 2017. Thanks to Ed Morin and our digital team, I'm Nora Flaherty.